It's common practice in this country to take a moment at Thanksgiving dinner and mention one thing you're grateful for. This year, might I suggest, the military.
Army food is no longer a matter of beans and guesswork. Since the last war, nutrition has become a science. And our Army Quartermaster Corps uses that science in planning Army meals. Food correctly used means fighting strength for our soldiers and better health for civilians.
That's a newsreel from the 1940s. Did you know many things we eat today were actually first developed for soldiers? That influence is especially apparent in Southern cuisine. Food writer Anastasia Marx de Salcedo is the author of Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. I spoke with her last year, along with Matthew Rayford. He's a farmer in Brunswick, Georgia. And I began the conversation with an anecdote about how I spent a number of years with a military supply officer who used to bring home sea rations, and they do not taste very good. Matthew's also an Army veteran, and here's what he had to say.
Well, they're just supposed to keep you going.
Well, that brings us to you, Anastasia. The impetus for this, I mean, what was the first food that you found had its roots in the military that kind of sparked your interest?
Oh, well, I have a little story about that, which is I'm a mom, and I pack a lot of lunches. And so one day, as I was putting together my daughter's school lunches, I got to thinking about the foods in them. You know, I had what I considered to be the healthy things, a sandwich, some carrot sticks and some grapes, and then the little less but child-pleasing things like the energy bar, a juice pouch, and some goldfish. And I started getting to thinking about the ingredients in the sandwich, and I said, these really probably aren't fresher or healthier than the things in packages. And then I started to do research on how the long shelf life was achieved for each of the items, each of the ingredients in the sandwich. And I found this reference to this obscure U.S. Army base, the Natick Soldier System Center. And I started to research on the Natick Center, and I found that it had been very deeply involved in 20th century processed food and now in the 21st.
So, if you don't like processed foods, I guess you can blame the military, but they're also the reason why things last longer, right? I mean, why we have certain meats and cheese that can keep for some time.
Exactly, because for the Army, their goal is to create a combat ration, and it has certain requirements. The first is that it needs to be imperishable. It has to actually last for up to 3 years at 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Has to be rugged because it gets dropped out of helicopters and stuffed into backpacks, and has to be affordable because it's Uncle Sam's dime, and it has to be broadly palatable. So all those values are what the Army looks for in the food science that goes into combat rations, and then it actually has a mandate to get that food science into consumer items.
So we're going to talk about some of the specific foods that you're talking about here. But Matthew, let me go to you as well, because you were in the military. What did you like, Matthew? What was your particular thing that you're always trading to get?
Well, I was that peaches and cream guy. I like peach cobbler, you know, so the closest I could get to it was to kind of add the peaches with the creamer from the coffee and whatever crackers I could, and put it in, and as I hydrate it, it would become kind of like this mushy cobbler taste with the sugar packet.
You're talking about the powdered creamer, right?
Yes, the powdered creamer, yeah.
Oh, that does not sound appetizing, but Anastasia, let me go back to you. Give us some examples of some foods that were first developed for the military and are now part of our everyday diet.
Oh, there are. I actually, in the book, at a certain point, I give a tour of the supermarket, and I remove any item that has a military influence or origin. And at the end, I estimate that the store would be half empty.
Wow.
So it's pretty broad. I mean, you can start even in the produce section, where those packaged greens and salads that you get are kept fresh using something called modified atmosphere packaging, which was developed to send produce to Vietnam. You can move on into the meat section, where the Army actually was the first entity to cut meat off the bone at the point of slaughter and box it up. And then that actually happened in the First and Second World Wars. And then, 40 years later, the Army developed a new form of animal protein, which is something called restructured meat. And those are basically the cheaper bits of meat stuck together with meat glue, and that became a staple in fast food restaurants. It's what the McRib is, and has also infiltrated the supermarket in the freezer section and the refrigerated section.
And Cheetos has a military grade, literally a military grade powder on it, right?
Yeah, the Cheeto is coated with cheese powder, and dehydrated cheese powder was developed during World War II because they were trying to reduce the weight and volume of food shipped overseas. They pretty much dehydrated everything, and when they got to cheese, because cheese doesn't have an internal structure, it just collapsed and turned into a powder. After the war, the little industry that had sprung up to create this dehydrated cheese powder then turned to the grocery manufacturers, and they soon began to manufacture convenience foods and snack items such as the Cheeto.
Or is that the same as the powder that's in Kraft macaroni and cheese?
I think it is.
I would think so. So, Matthew, you actually took one of the things you learned from military food, and that was meat preservation, did you not?
Yes. So the MAP process that that Anastasia was just talking about is one of the ways that we actually do some of our food here with sous vide. So basically what we do is we take those items, we season them, and then we put them in a machine that actually vacuum seals the bag. Then we take that bag and drop it down into water, depending on what the degrees that we're trying to cook the item in, and cook it that way. And then when we're getting ready to actually do the service, we take that item out of that package, sear it off, and then serve it.
I mean, I find it interesting, Matthew, that you have referred to the ways in which you've become a more creative cook because of having been in the military.
Right, because there was always improvise, adapt, and overcome. That was always, I mean, that's one of the service mottos, right? So, you know, this is what you have. This is all the space you have to work it in. I think Anastasia just talked about the fact of, you know, they couldn't ship all of this food because of the weight. So how do we dehydrate it? How do we make it smaller? So
yeah, pull the moisture out.
Yeah, you know.
Well, I mean, I know I was engaged to a man who he used to do his cooking on the back of his tank because the exhaust is so hot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've done it many a times. I have warmed up beef stew that was inside and warmed it up off the back of the Bradley.
That's actually an excellent point, because the military really has been the source of many food science innovations during the 20th century. And we can talk about things like freeze drying, so that gives you your coffee, food irradiation, which consumers didn't really like, but is used now routinely on spices and herbs. Something called intermediate moisture foods, which are kind of had all those soft and chewy bakery items that we eat. And right on up to the turn of the 21st century, when the military, working with a consortium of big companies, developed something called high pressure processing. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Matt, where you use all this pressure to kill the microbes inside food.
Microbes inside. Mm-hmm.
And that is people now buy as the refrigerated guacamole you can get at the supermarket, those single portion juices and smoothies, and many deli meat items.
So another thing that you mentioned, talk about in your book, and you kind of go into detail about it, is the development of active dry yeast, which I cannot imagine how people baked before they had that. How did this come about?
Yeah, that's actually a great story. And it was one of the things I was going to sort of mention for your listeners, is there's actually a lot of items that we home cooks use that come from the military, and active dry yeast is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Until World War II, yeast had to be fresh, and because yeast is a live organism, and it was sold in moist compressed cakes that had to be refrigerated, and they only lasted for up to 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, the Army actually had a special unit of bakers who prepared bread in overseas camps, and it was very difficult to obtain local yeast. So the Quartermaster Corps began to research.
Oh, right, because they couldn't ship it.
Right, exactly. So they began to research how to preserve, basically to put yeast into a state of suspended animation, and they figured out a way that involved a very long, slow drying that didn't stress the yeast organisms too much, and then they were able to rehydrate them months later and turn them into bread.
It's like they're putting the yeast to sleep because they can't kill it or it won't work.
Right.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But Matthew, to a certain extent, all these things that she's talking about are kind of the opposite of what you do now with your life. They're talking about how to keep food and make it last, and you're all about fresh food.
Well, you know, how about this, though? Part of having fresh food, right, is having it seasonally. And how do you eat a tomato in the middle of winter? Well, what do? You make marinara. You make stewed tomatoes. And what do? You do canning. So the preservation of food and preserving food is still a part of eating fresh food.
So and may I jump in and add that canning actually came about during the time of Napoleon,
right?
And has a military
backing,
origin.
Right. I mean,
yes,
it's just like salt, right? I think the term is you're not worth your salt. And one of the things that were given out, I think, if I remember correctly, were to Roman warriors were salt, so they could preserve their food, so they could go further and travel further. Right? Because, you know, long distances and going through places that you've never been before, you'd have to have some sort of food with you, right? So one of the ways that you were given rations was you were given rations of salt so that you could dry your food. So, I mean, there's a lot of food things that we have been doing forever that come out of that, you know, conquering warrior type of movement.
You know, another thing I found really fascinating about your book, Anastasia, is how many people can now be cooks because of the military. And the reason I say that is because there's a number of things that have made cooking quicker and more easy. Otherwise, those of us who work a lot of hours, I would never have the time to go home and cook were it not for some of the developments they made in rice, for example, and many of the other things, the way that they preserved certain spices and herbs. Tell me a little bit about what kind of research the military did with rice.
The addition that the military made to rice was to industrialize the parboiled rice, which is actually an old Indian technique where you steam the rice and the nutrients actually get embedded in it. And that ended up being turned into a product, which is converted rice, and again was widely used during World War II.
And, you know, Anastasia, you also talk about the fact that they now, or have for the past 30 years or so, included Tabasco sauce.
Correct. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a Southern product.
Yes.
And that has actually entered the ration with the MRE, I think, in 1981. And at first was served in a little tiny bottle, which soldiers often brought back with them as sort of a memento. They've moved now to a little pouch. But that is definitely one way that soldiers can spice up their meals. But I was also going to add in to what Matt said, that one of the things that the Army has done has been to broaden the type of offering it has for entrees with the MRE to meet some of the changing demographics of the United States. So you have a lot more Mexican items, you have halal items, you have kosher items, you have vegetarian items, and so forth. So things are getting a little bit more interesting, too.
Halal is a food that conforms to the Islamic faith.
Yes.
I wonder what some of the things that the Army is working on now is they're trying to get a little fresher. What are some of the interesting developments going on in the military now with food?
Well, one of the things that I think is going to happen is, you know, what the influence that the military had on processed foods after World War II, there was this core set of values that I mentioned, that they be imperishable, durable, affordable, and appeal to this broad range of palates. As, you know, time has gone on, we've become much more aware of some of the health impacts of eating foods that have, to achieve those things, a lot of chemical preservatives or additional ingredients such as stabilizers, emulsifiers, and thickeners, which aren't really good for us. And so the Army, to its credit, is also moving in the same direction as consumers in seeking more healthful food. And it's, you know, it's worked to eliminate trans fats, reduce salt and sugar, and looking for ways to create a fresher and more nutritious product, even doing such things as sort of encapsulating, which is or microencapsulation of protein and other things so that those things stay fresh, even if a food is stored for 3 years.
Okay, so Matthew, before we go, there is one thing out of the sea rats I kind of miss. They had these little circular chocolates with crispy rice in them that I still to this day kind of crave. And I'm wondering if there is anything from your MREs that you would eat again if you could.
You know, funny you say that. I always liked the beans that were in there.
Were they, they were refried or?
No, they were like these like baked beans, and I would actually use the hot sauce that she was just talking about. I love those beans.
Okay, so all you need to do is go out, grab a military person, Matthew, steal his beans or her beans, and throw some Tabasco on there. I've been speaking with Matthew Rayford. He runs a farm in Brunswick, Georgia, and also Anastasia Marx del Salcedo. She's the author of Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
Celeste.